welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am David Bax. Tyler Smith is, of course, still recovering from the world's worst case of West Nile virus in the hospital. I know normally Scott Nye fills in, and we appreciate that. But this week we've got a different guest host, a longtime friend of the show and former co-host of a really good podcast called Previously On. It's Sean Ingram. How you doing, Sean? Welcome back to the show.
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Sorry, I introduced you just as you were taking a drink. I could see on the Zoom. My apologies. Before we get into our topic, I do want to tell the listeners about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I use them each every day of my life. Today I was listening to, I guess I was in a nostalgic mood today because I listened to some albums that turned 20 recently, because this would have been the time that I was like working at a video store and going to college, and these albums were all like on heavy rotation in the CD, the 5-disc CD player at the video store where I worked. So I listened to Dear Catastrophe Waitress by Belle and Sebastian.
Good album.
I listened to, for the first time since 20 years ago, I listened to The Lemon of Pink by The Books.
Also,
do you remember
good.
That?
I like that one.
Yeah, me too. I really liked that a lot. And then I also listened to an album I've always kind of liked, but even at the time was on the fence on. I want to get your take on Transatlanticism and just Death Cab for Cutie in general.
Pass.
I kind of figured you weren't. There's some good songs, though, on Transatlanticism.
Yeah, I can't hate on them, but for me, it's a pass, you know? Yeah, they're just one of those bands that never hit for me, but I don't begrudge anyone who is into it.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those bands that I like. I get, you know,
right.
So
yeah,
I can enjoy
it.
Like, I understand why people love them, but it's not necessarily for me. But I don't dislike it either. Like I said, there are things I like. The Sound of Settling. I like the song Transatlanticism. The New Year. Yeah, so this is the new year. Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. But so you're just Death Cab in, so it's not just a Transatlanticism thing. You don't like the photo album, you don't like
the
two ones were called.
No, yeah, the whole thing passed me by, I guess.
Yeah. And the only reason I actually did have a CD copy of Transatlanticism that I ended up taking and keeping for myself is because I don't remember what label that was on, but they gave it to, I was the manager of the video store at the time, and they gave it to me. They were like, hey, like, I guess they were just like going around like the cool neighborhoods or whatever, like, which, like, that's where I worked. It was a pretty cool neighborhood and like hip places that played music. They were like giving out free copies of the CD to like, hey, maybe you want to play this over your store. So I do have, I do have a CD. I mean, my CDs are all in a box in the garage, but I do have a CD copy of Transatlanticism. And I think Natalie has a vinyl copy of the photo album that's in our record collection. But they're neither here nor there for me as a band. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know what? Sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Sean, we're back. let's get into it, shall we? I mentioned before that you and I mentioned a podcast called Previously On, which is a podcast that you and I did about television.
Indeed.
So this is going to be a rare TV focused episode of Battleship
Pretension. Yes, your lowest rated episode. Your lowest number of downloads.
Oh, no.
People love it?
No, I don't know if they love it, but I'm saying we have had much less popular episodes when we like...
Got it. I
like to think the most of our listeners, and I like to think that they'll come along with me when we do episodes on like sort of experimental film and stuff like that. But those are the ones that really, just lay there.
Yeah, I guess TV's pretty
TV's easy. Popular. Yeah. But that gets me to the, well, I'll say right now, what I want this episode to do is we want to sort of hammer out a definition of what the new American golden age of television was, or some say still is. I think we'll get to the fact that I very much don't agree with that.
I don't either. I'll put and that's cards a big on the table.
So here's what happened. This is why this has been on my mind for probably a couple of years at this point. Around 2015, I mostly fell out of love with TV. I used to be a big TV person. Obviously, you and I did that show together after. After that, I did another show with Paul Goebel called Hey, Watch This. Like, I used to watch a lot of TV, and I kind of fell out of love with TV pretty quickly, kind of all at once in 2015. I don't know if it was, that would have been the fifth season of Game of Thrones, which is when I stopped watching Game of Thrones because the fifth season is terrible and I've heard it doesn't get much better. And I found myself doing that with a lot of shows 2015. Some reality shows and a couple of comedies like The Good Place that Natalie and I watched together. I spent about 5 years like not really watching TV, certainly not anywhere near at the rate I used to. And then during the pandemic, when we were stuck indoors for a year, I started getting back into some of the TV shows that I had missed because I'd stopped at the time that I did. And I found some real gems, some things that I've gone on to that I've become a big fan of BoJack Horseman. I am not this is not the consensus in my household, but I'm a big fan of Showtime's The Affair, which, Natalie doesn't fully like believe that I'm serious when I say I like that show, but actually, we will probably talk about The Affair again because I think there are things about The Affair that I like think apply. And so, getting there's back one, into these shows,
we'll probably mention it, not to sideline you, but I consider it a golden age show. But there, it's one I recommended to you, *Halt and Catch Fire*. You got into that, right?
Yes, yeah, and that was, I mean, that's, yeah. This is just an aside. *Halt and Catch Fire* is like, not only is it a great TV show, it's a textbook case of why TV can be a great medium.
Yes.
Because it's a show that figured itself out as it went along.
Yeah.
And it became, you know, if you watch the pilot episode and then someone told you, hey, by season three, those two characters are the leads, you know, it seems so strange, but like, that's something that I think we'll get into. And I think Game of Thrones is a big part of it. Of shows that don't take time to figure themselves out, and fan bases that don't tolerate shows taking time to figure themselves out.
I sidelined you there.
So what I was saying is, I started watching these shows again. Some are good. Some I kind of understand. A big thing that I've noticed, and I think I've said before on the podcast, definitely I said on the Patreon. I can't remember if I said it on the regular podcast, but. What to me, one of the hallmarks of the golden age is that these great shows were all kind of given the room to stake out their own visual style. And now it feels like now that like prestige TV is such a big thing, it feels like there are like 4 to 6 pre-established like looks that a show can have. Yep, and every show kind of has to fit into those.
I definitely have thoughts on that for later.
Yeah. So, I guess I have more to say, but let's throw, I want to throw to you, what are your overall thoughts on on the new golden age of American television.
Yeah, everything you said made sense to me. I would agree that it is over, and it has been for at least a few years, in my mind, yeah. Yeah, I kind of, I don't know where to start, but maybe we could start by, I don't know if you have an outline, maybe we could start by, like, what makes a great television show in your mind? And that's kind of a big question, because obviously there are many different ways to be, to do good shows, but, like, is there something about this era or the shows that we're going to be talking about that you mentioned the visual style already, but is there anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think there was also this is something that broke through. I think suddenly audiences became way more tolerant of a show being not being the exact same thing week to week. Mm. Obviously there've been other shows before that, but even other great, like, pre-golden age shows, you know, like, I don't know, Homicide or whatever, are still, like, they fall into certain genres. And I think I feel like we're dancing around The Sopranos, which is the sure. show that I think, if we're going to pinpoint a kickoff for the new golden age, I would say the premiere of The Sopranos is a good starting place, because that was a show that it's a mob show, and if you watch the pilot, you definitely get a certain idea of what the show is that isn't really what it's going to be, because it became a family drama, it became a comedy, it became a occasionally a sort of existential psycho like exploration mm-hmm. with all the dream sequences and yep. and stuff. I want to go back to just comedy. You and I talked about it in a previous thing. We did a whole, like, series of episodes about The Sopranos, and just how funny it is, because Natalie and I were rewatching it, as we always are, and we just got to, I think it's the season 4 premiere, actually, For All Debts, Public and Private, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And Tony and Bobby are sitting at the diner.
Oh, yes. This is a classic.
Bobby says,
Nostradamus, like, thing?
Well, first he says Quasimodo predicted all
right.
this.
Right.
And he says that's, you mean Nostradamus, and then they get into a whole thing about, like, the Cathedral of Notre Dame and the College Notre Dame, and the Cathedral has the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and the College has the Quarterback and the Halfback of Notre Dame, and it ends with Bobby going, "You gonna tell me you never thought about that? The back thing with Notre Dame?"
The back thing.
Yeah. All right. So that's an aside, but I think that, I don't know, what do you think are the hallmarks of these shows?
Well, I've been thinking about this a little bit, and it's up for debate. I want to get your take, because maybe you might not agree, but I think a show being personal is kind of crucial. Like, a lot of shows, a lot of good shows, and maybe most good shows predating this era, were entertaining and well written or well acted or whatever, but the personal touch is not there. And it's like Sopranos is obviously a great example. Like, David Chase, the creator, is not in the mafia and never was, as far as we know. But
yes,
you know, he's an Italian American. He grew up in New Jersey, in that area where the show is set. You know, in a bigger picture, he lived in America at the time the show was made, which is a lot of what the show is about. It's like, kind of the decline of the American empire, in a way. Not to and be it too would grandiose.
No, it exactly is. And it goes on to be, I think, one of the best works of art, the best post 9/11 works of art in its last handful of seasons.
Yeah.
The way the characters, what they think about, what they're preoccupied with, what they talk about, like everything. 9/11 changes the show right in the middle of its run, just the way it changed a lot of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know, where do we want to?
but I see what you're saying about the personal thing, because like it's definitely the golden age, the new golden age is when all of us lay people learned the word showrunner, and yes. and showrunner went from just being a sort of like administrative position to being synonymous with like auteur, essentially.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, you're right. That's a big part of it. Yeah. So I've generally pinpointed, or can you generally pinpoint? That's an oxymoron. I've pinpointed Sopranos premiere as the date.
Yeah, that's generally accepted, and I don't think there's any reason to push against that.
So, but here's my argument for end date, if not actual end date, because there are probably shows that were still part of this after it. The sort of spiritual end date for me is the Breaking Bad finale, because I mean, you were always, I love Breaking Bad. I actually rewatched it during the pandemic. It's still a good show, but it, I think the way that show ended, and it also has a lot to do with a few years previously Lost ending, mm-hmm. and people being very unhappy about the end of Lost. Breaking Bad ended and people loved the ending so much, even though I think I don't love that ending.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, it's too pat, but I think a certain type of fanboy loves that stuff, and it's exactly what they wanted and didn't get out of Lost. And so I feel like the end of Breaking Bad kind of signals the shift into the era we're now in, where it's not, in many cases, it's not the showrunner who's driving things, it's the fans. Like increasingly things are made with that fan audience in mind and are catering to them. And then you've also got the Game of Thrones thing, which I think, despite its high production value, and having some really great episodes, even from the beginning, it kind of bothered me that it didn't feel like a TV show in the way that I love TV, and that it didn't feel like there was much left up to chance or whatever. It didn't, that personal touch, I didn't feel like, you know, if you watch Deadwood, you know, I think we've talked about before, like there are times when, like, you know, Wyatt Earp shows up and hangs out, and then it doesn't work and he leaves, because that was like Milch just being like, I want to try this. Oh, didn't work out. Oh well, like, let's move on.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Game of Thrones and then, you know, you get into like the Marvel Netflix stuff and the Disney Plus stuff, where everything is like these little mini series, as opposed to an ongoing series in the way that I like.
Yeah, no, that completely makes sense. And I tend to agree that there has been a shift in, like, I don't know. There's a famous, not a famous, it's an expression. I don't know if it's a quote I should be attributing to anyone, but like, there's a, like, I feel like I should start this sentence over. It's like, you can give the fans what they want, or you can give them what they need, and there's a subtle difference there.
Huh? I think it's the quote that I'm thinking of that has to do with that is Joss Whedon, actually, who obviously is a
I have mixed feelings on him nowadays, obviously, but
well, yeah, nowadays
he was kind of ahead of the curve in that way.
Yeah, he's to the new golden age what like the Stooges are to punk rock, maybe.
Sure.
Does that work?
Maybe.
But yeah, he said something about like, you don't give them what they want, you give them what they don't know they need, I think, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, ultimately, it's more satisfying to the fan base to get the latter.
Yeah.
But they might be pissed off in the moment, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would agree that there's a shift, and this is a cultural shift, and we can't talk about it, but you know, it branches out into everything, you know, movies, music. It's like fans, super fans, stands, whatever, kind of dictating the terms of entertainment.
Yeah.
Which I think we can agree is a negative thing.
Yeah, it's not good for art at all.
Yeah, but yeah, that's.
So I want to get into sort of what are the defining shows, and in thinking about that, I was kind of thinking that, like, if I'm saying 2013, if I'm saying it was 1999 to 2013, is the main era there.
Wait, was that the Breaking Bad finale?
Yeah, been 10 years.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So if I'm saying that it's that, but maybe I'll say 2015 because that was my argument earlier. Either way, this is all pre like Me Too. Sure. And so I realized by looking at these defining shows, it's not until later in the golden era that you start to have, I think, more female showrunners and more showrunners of color. I mean, when Girls premieres in what, 2010? Is that right?
That sounds right. Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Yeah. Near the end. So that's, I mean, that's definitely a sticking point here is that, oh, 2012. Wow. Girls is more recent than I thought.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of the shows that I'm going to think of as like the main golden age shows are male driven shows.
Sure.
So we mentioned Sopranos. What else do you think absolutely has to be in the canon?
Has to be in the canon. Deadwood. Yeah. Deadwood.
Okay. Okay.
I think Mad Men.
Mad Men, yeah. Mad Men for sure. We haven't talked about comedy, but I think the Golden Age definitely extended to comedy in some ways.
Definitely.
But the elephant in the room here then is Louis.
That's I did make a note about that. I guess we should talk about Louis.
I mean, it feels, I don't know
it's
why,
like avoidable,
it feels,
right?
Yeah,
because
it feels difficult to, I don't know, say positive things about someone that we have generally agreed is a bad dude. But it also would be disingenuous to pretend like we didn't all love Louis when it was on.
Yeah, I definitely did. And I mean, it's indisputable that show has been very influential on all subsequent whatever generations of show. I guess it premiered in 2010, so it's been that long.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's hugely hugely influential. So even if we didn't like it, it's worth talking about just because it's. I mean, you don't get a lot of shows. I mean, a lot of shows don't get whatever the green light if Louis doesn't exist. A lot of people don't.
Sure.
Probably
yeah.
Probably even think to create the shows they made.
Certainly, Atlanta is a great like example of a show that is personality driven and also just willing to be whatever it needs to be week to week. You know, Louis would do maybe not as drastically as Atlanta, but still, it was a series of short stories, or occasionally there'd be like a 3 or 4 episode arc or whatever, but they weren't Louis himself was pushing the form, I think. And I think you found more of that in comedy at the time.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Atlanta, I guess, is post the era we're talking about, but I would kind of...
Well, yeah, it's not like there weren't good shows before, and that, right. Like there haven't it's been good shows since, but yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly in the mold of the good shows.
Yeah.
But what else is there? I mean, Breaking Bad, do you consider that?
I guess, I mean, I don't know. I want to be like a contrarian and say no. But I also want to be a contrarian and say no about The Wire, but that's ridiculous. Like,
well, that crossed my mind too. And, I'm not going to make that argument, but I would say it's less, I don't know. It's less, what's the word? Digressive, or it's less willing to like you were talking about with Deadwood. It's less just willing to do things just for the sake of doing them. Like that show is so, and I think this is why people freaked out about it so much, but that show is so story driven, or like so focused on story. And there was very good character work, but it was never about the characters, and it was always about, you know, what's this story they're telling? What's this message?
What are they unpacking this season?
What are they unpacking? Yeah.
And it's that speaks to maybe some risk taking, like that, like imagine you like, well, as you don't have to imagine, we all did it. You watch season one of The Wire, and suddenly season two has this whole new cast of stevedores or whatever they
that's
are.
True. That's true. Fair point. Very fair point. Yeah.
But I know you, like me, have been in the past a fan of the best show. And I always point to AP Mike's criticism of The Wire, which is, it's like we're all going to get degrees at the end.
Right. Yeah. I would say The Wire, really, it's a great show, but it doesn't haunt you in a way that like The Sopranos does, you know?
I agree. I watched The Wire when it aired, and I have rewatched it in full once when I got the DVDs. And I don't really feel the need to watch it again. Mm-hmm. But I know, I mean, you said it doesn't haunt you, but it's definitely made its mark. Like people still, I think The Wire is still on people's minds. People still remember it. They certainly remember Omar. And by the way, real quick, I mentioned the DVDs. If you are going to watch The Wire,
don't watch those upgrade, the HD upgrade.
Yeah, don't watch those because they're the wrong aspect ratio and it looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a 4:3 show. I still think The Wire gets talked about or thought of.
Sure.
Whereas I feel in my memory at the time, like the two big shows, like what's the best show ever in the history of television? Is it The Wire or is it Battlestar Galactica? And Battlestar Galactica has largely not stuck around, I think, in people's consciousness. And that could be because now I like the ending of Lost, but I agree with people who don't like the ending of Battlestar Galactica. It's not, and I don't just mean the last episode. It really felt like, it so hasn't stuck in the culture that I can't remember the creator's name. Ronald D. Moore. It felt like Ronald Moore like looked at other shows that had gone on too long and wore out their welcome, and he made the opposite mistake of like rushing to like, we're going to wrap this up in four seasons, and it was like you could have done another season to like pace this out a little bit.
Yeah.
But still, Battlestar Galactica has some some great stuff. I have fond memories of watching it, but it's interesting that I don't think if you had asked people 10 years ago about the Golden Age, maybe Battlestar Galactica would have still been top of mind.
Yeah. But, well, this is related. It's a little bit of a tangent, but do you think a show has to quote unquote stick the landing to qualify or be considered a Golden Age? Yeah, I would tend to agree.
Yeah,
I tend to agree.
Yeah, I don't. But I think a lot of the newer breed of TV fans would
disagree that. Yeah,
I mean, that was like a common complaint with the end of Lost, of people like online saying like I wasted six years or something. Yeah, yeah, right. But it's like, no, you didn't waste. Like, you watched all the episodes and you loved
enjoyed
them.
Like, I'm sure you enjoyed more episodes than you didn't.
Yeah, yeah. But now you got me thinking about like what are some shows that I think are great but didn't stick the landing. I guess I said Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
But I think there's got to be others that. I mean, one thing I learned from you and from doing previously on is you were more willing, and I've become more willing to just cut bait on a show if it sure. if it's bad for too long.
Yeah.
I certainly did that. I think actually I remember like when we were doing previously on, I think it was like toward the end of like the last two seasons of How I Met Your Mother. And I think at a certain point you and I realized we were only both still watching the show because
we were talking about
the podcast. And we kind of, yeah. And so we both bailed on How I Met Your Mother. And then I foolishly went back and watched it because I was just too tempted by it all wrapping up. But I don't know, because now I'm watching How I Met Your Mother again.
I know you have a whole other podcast about it, but yeah. How does that hold up?
I mean, I still think it's very funny. But I mean, if you're talking about like socially, like with our cultural values, how does it hold up?
Sure.
So poorly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the Barney stuff is pretty.
But even beyond that, the amount of like body shaming jokes and like, I think when I went into this, I do a podcast, if the listeners don't know, I think they probably do, called The One Where I Met Your Mother, where my wife and I are watching Friends and How I Met Your Mother together. And I went into this kind of just like assuming Friends, by virtue of being 10 years older, would have aged more poorly. And there's definitely stuff. There's definitely a lot of gay panic stuff and fat shaming and stuff on Friends, but nowhere near How I Met Your Mother. And I think it was just How I Met Your Mother happened to come out at a time where that kind of like quote unquote edgy comedy, I think, was in vogue. Not that I actually think it's edgy, but I think it thinks it is, you know. And it's like, it's funny, like we can say these sexist things because we all know we don't really mean it, you know.
Yeah, it's like the uber example of that to me is that when I forget when the movie came out, 40-year-old version, there's this 08, whole exchange.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
There's that whole exchange about, you know how I know you're gay or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, we can make
to watch
these,
now.
Yeah, yeah. We can make these jokes because we're, yeah. Anyway, that's a big sidebar. But what were we talking about?
I guess we're just going back. And I named Louie. What are some of the other like comedies that you think need to be part of the canon? What were we watching at the time?
I guess
would Arrested Development?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say yes. And that's also a good example of a show that didn't stick the landing.
I never even watched that last season.
I mean, yeah, you don't need to.
I watched the first Netflix season, and I think I kind of defended it a little bit.
Did you?
Because I think Mitch, what's his name?
Hurwitz.
Mitch Hurwitz I think, I don't think it entirely worked, but the way that he did that fourth season, I guess, was the first Netflix one, right? The way he did that was like really steering in to the Netflix model of like, these could be any length, and also people are going to binge them, so we don't have to, we can think of it as sort of a bunch of puzzle pieces that we that people can watch in whatever pace they want. And I feel like streaming TV, maybe looking at that and seeing that people didn't like it, a lot of streaming TV has just like defaulted to being like, you know, exactly what sort of premium prestige TV was in many ways, or being this miniseries mold that I've talked about, and not really having fun with the new delivery method.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a noble idea.
Yeah.
A noble pursuit, but maybe it didn't work out. One that came, does 30 Rock get in there?
Yeah, I would put 30 Rock in there.
That's one we talked about.
And that's one that we talked about, How Many Are They Not Aging Well. 30 Rock seems to have aged very well with its...
It seems like it, yeah.
Not just with its jokes and everything, but like the Jack Donaghy being a guy who has no interest in television, who's just installed by the parent corporation.
Yeah, no kidding.
And Tina Fey sort of laboring under his whims is really ahead of, really prescient in seeing what TV would become.
Tell me about it. Yeah, depressing.
Yeah. 30 Rock. That's a great one.
Yeah, Community. I think. I mean, I okay. talked about it a lot at the time. I know you.
I never really watched it. Yeah,
but that's a show that. I mean, it definitely was. It was a mixed bag. You know, there was the whole season where, the creator
Ben Harmon wasn't there. Yeah,
yeah, I wasn't involved. But I would say, you know, I would say that is a personal show, and that, you know, was very,
right.
You know, if we're talking comedies, I'd probably throw that in there. But what about a big one for us both, I think, was Friday Night Lights. What do you think of that?
That's a great one. It's also a great sort of case of that sort of the push and pull between like this new era of showrunner like driven things, and then
the traditional
because I mean, the first two seasons are 22 episodes, maybe the third one, I can't remember what the third one is now. I can't remember when they went to the shorter episodes. And then also there's that really stupid storyline in season two where Jesse Plemons accidentally kills a guy, or kills a guy in self-defense.
Yeah.
And that's like, that is just the, you know, the old guard of like network saying like, you need something dramatic to happen in this show. That's mostly just like, about, you know, personal relationships and stuff, you know, but I think it's very telling that like, that's not, when I think about Friday Night Lights, I don't think about the self-defense. Right. I don't even really think about the football games or like how each team did, you know. I think about like, what's the coach's daughter, Julie, like, Matt and Julie losing their virginity to each other, or like making that hopeless. That's one of my favorite episodes of television from that decade, I think.
Yeah. This is making me think of, I think one key thing to a successful show is character, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Just like, as a general point, at least what I like, it's not about like what the story of the show is or what the hook of the show is. It's really about the characters, and you know, other people have argued this, but like, you're spending a lot of time with these people, They're in your home. If these characters are not interesting or funny or there's something there, it's not going to be enough. And so yeah. to me, that's what all the great shows kind of have in common. Even, you know, maybe this is obvious, but even characters you despise, you know, there's something there to keep you watching.
Yeah. That's a great, point because I thought about Halt and Catch Fire that way in the sense that like, I still like I think about those people, like,
right.
You know, I'm like, yeah, I wonder what Cameron's up to. Is that she's like a real person? Like, I think about like, it feels like they had lives. Well, except for the one of them who didn't, you know, make it to the end of the series, but they have lives beyond that.
Beyond the show. Yeah. And that's a perfect example. Cause like at this point, several years removed, I couldn't tell you the ins and outs of the story of that show.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, those characters, I could tell you about them, or, you know, and I still sometimes think about them.
A more recent show that I had a very similar feeling about when it ended, this took me by surprise, was Superstore. I don't know if you were a Superstore watcher.
Never watched.
Yeah, that was a COVID one for us, and a fascinating COVID one because its final season is like a COVID season where like they're, you know, they're wearing masks and it's a show. I mean, obviously COVID has come up in other shows, but I haven't seen any other shows dig into what it was like to like be a quote unquote essential worker, you know, by working at a department store through COVID, and also be very funny and very funny in a character driven way. Superstore is surprisingly, it took me by surprise because I had watched the pilot when it first aired and I was like, not fully impressed by it, but went on to be a really great show. I have a couple other comedies. Party Down.
Yeah. I think that's past our deadline, maybe. Past the end. When was the original incarnation of that show?
I feel like it was earlier than that. Yeah, 2009. 2009 was when it first.
Oh, was it really that long? Jesus. Premiered.
Yeah. And then this is like a subset of the new.
All right.
Like there is a subset of the new American Golden Age that you could basically sum up as Adult Swim. And
this is
within that there is Tim and Eric, awesome Tim show, great Eric. Job.
Yep.
Which I think is one of the just most interesting things ever put on television.
Yeah, it's like at points it's practically avant-garde television, which is not really a thing that exists. that's a great one because that also definitely fulfills the personal angle because that's so specific to those two guys, I think. Adult Swim in general, I think, was maybe doesn't get talked about enough, but like a lot of the stuff they put on was very idiosyncratic and very like specific and very personal.
Yeah, because they were like, no one was
like
looking.
Like home movies.
You know?
Huh? Because they were what?
Because like, I was like, no one was looking at them. They were able to do what they want.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned home movies. Home movies is great.
Home movies is a great example, I think. It started right in 1999, but then moved to Adult Swim 2000 or 2001. But yeah, that's a very personal show, and I think it fits right in with any of the other shows we're talking about.
Yeah, I definitely, I love home movies. I've tried to get into Metalocalypse, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's a solid show, but it doesn't have that.
Yeah.
It's not as welcoming
I guess, maybe it was Lauren Bouchard was more the more than Brendan Small, the creative person that I was looking for or responding to, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
There was a Home Movies reunion at Comic-Con a few years ago. That was a lot of fun. Lauren Bouchard and...
did Melissa show up?
I'm trying to remember. It was Lauren Bouchard and John Benjamin and Brendan Small. But yeah, I think it might have been Melissa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's not really an actor, which is incredible. She was like a producer on the show. Okay, not to list shows, but I think there's a couple that come to mind that we have to mention. I think The Office, the original one.
We're talking the new golden age of American television.
I know, but it was, yes, that's a fair point. But again, it was so influential. I mean, obviously there's the American version, but just that, the way that show was and how it was made and everything, I think you got to at least mention it.
Yeah, I think it's a good point because you see, I think, sometimes people learn the wrong lessons from successful movies and TV shows, you know?
Right.
When I think about shows like Modern Family or Abbott Elementary, both shows that I like, I mean, I liked Modern Family early on. It kind of got very repetitive as it went on.
Talking Heads.
But doing the mockumentary style.
Yeah.
But they're not bringing anything. Like, the mockumentary doesn't bring anything to it. Whereas The Office, the British Office, is not the show it is if it's not a mockumentary. So much of the comedic tension is David Brent, like, knowing that there's a camera on him and, like, performing for the camera. So it's definitely worth mentioning in its influence. But it can't make the canon because it's not
American. Can't make the canon. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. And the other one that came to mind that, it's not in my personal canon, but I think it's probably maybe should be included. And I know people will be upset if we don't mention it. It's 6 Feet Under.
Okay. I only watched the first season and I really liked it.
Okay.
I tried multiple times. I've tried and I could never get into the second season. And it would always peter out.
Yeah. That to me is a show that was, it was never like my kind of show, you know, even though I recognized that it was good. Speaking of repetitive, there was a lot to it that felt repetitive after a while, but I did end up watching the whole thing and, I don't know. Yeah. It's worth just, yeah, I think it's worth mentioning. And just the whole, speaking of fan satisfaction or fan demand, like the whole, like, oh, you want an ending? Here's how every fucking character dies.
Yeah.
spoilers for the finale of 6 Feet Under, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, I knew that and I have never watched.
That's such an interesting way. Actually, I don't remember exactly now. I think it's a good finale before that. But then after that, it's such an interesting... It's almost like a dare. Yeah. Like, yeah, you want to know the ending? Here you go. I admire it in a way. I don't know if I like, I don't know if I love it, but I admire it inside.
This is the thought. I was just looking at a list of, or I was looking at the Wikipedia entry for the new American golden age of television.
Sure.
And seeing like they're listing shows sort of chronologically, and the shows they have at the end, which I think of as post golden age shows,
on that article?
This says some dispute as to whether the age ended in the mid to late 2010s or early 2020s or remains ongoing. I'm starting to think, is part of the death of this new golden age the streaming model? Because the shows they have at the end are House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, neither of which I think belong. I shouldn't say that. I haven't watched Orange is the New Black. I've watched some House of Cards and I don't think they belong in the canon. But is that all at once streaming model part of the reason, you know, it's so hard for shows to stick when they have this brief moment in the sun? Like, occasionally, yeah, there's a Stranger Things, but even Stranger Things eventually went to the weekly model, didn't it?
No, it didn't.
That's my, the most recent season was still all at once.
Yeah, I think
Okay.
I mean, it's been like 2 or 3 years, but
okay. Maybe I guess I missed, maybe I'm thinking of something else that switched to that. But like, when we were talking about comedies, I feel like, and I only watched the first season, I know it went on for a while, but I loved The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I loved that first season, but it does kind of feel like, because you could watch it in the whole thing in an afternoon, mm-hmm. it didn't feel as important or worth talking about. Does it make sense?
Yes, definitely. It's like, yeah, it's like, it becomes, I think for me, and maybe you felt this way, it becomes a burden almost. You're like, Jesus, there's 13 episodes I have to watch right now, or I'm never going to see it, or like, no one else is going to want to talk about it, or
yeah, you know. Well, this is, I mean, we're going to get into like back in my day type of old guy stuff, but yeah. so much of the fun for me of watching TV shows during this golden age was having a week in between each episode to like discuss to your friends, or, you know, this was the heyday of like message boards, you know, things like that. And so, yeah, I get that pressure of being like, oh, there's a new season of the show, mm-hmm. and someone will have watched it all by dawn. And if I don't do that, then I already feel like I'm out of the conversation. Okay, so to change subjects a little bit, now I said spiritually that the golden age ended in 2013, but clearly that can't entirely be true, because there are two great shows that premiered in 2013 that would go on to be great after that. The Americans and Hannibal. Hannibal might be too much of an outlier to be in the canon, but I do think it's like one of the great sort of like creator driven shows.
It does feel, yeah, it did feel like, creator driven, I guess. You already said it.
Yeah.
That does feel, The Americans to me, and granted, I didn't finish it.
Neither did I, to be honest, but yeah.
But the thing that stops me, and it's you mentioned it in context of The Sopranos, but it doesn't have a sense of humor. I don't remember laughing watching The Americans.
Yeah, that's a
maybe
good point.
Ever.
Yeah, that's a good
which
point.
To me, it's like a dinner with no greens on your plate or something. It's like, yeah. you're missing a crucial element, you know?
Yeah, so that's a good point.
To me, it's gotta have that. It's not a truly great show or a golden age type show.
Right.
And I think, yeah, touching on that, we should give credit to definitely Sopranos, already mentioned. I mean, The Wire for sure. Deadwood, definitely. But like, yeah, all those shows, yeah, are very funny.
And then, Mad Men could also be very
Mad
funny.
Mad Men, very, very much so.
Yeah, that's a good point about The Americans. But I do think one of the hallmarks that we were talking, that I think I mentioned, or we kind of danced around at least, was interest in like character psychology. And I think that's one of the hallmarks, or that's one of the main things about the Americans, is that it's not melodrama. Like, the action is driven by who these characters are, and what their psyches are, and the decisions that they mm-hmm. make. Okay. I have a couple other like sort of groupings I want to talk about.
Yeah.
What about children's television? Because
hit me.
Adventure Time, I think, should be maybe one of the canonical shows of the new Golden Age.
Okay, I'm listening.
Because it is, it's distinct. It has its own point of view. It also has its own look.
Yeah, this is all
and,
true.
Yeah, and also to your point, often very funny, yeah. and rich and willing to experiment, but also not afraid to be very emotional at times. You know, there's an episode where what's her name, Marceline the Vampire Queen,
yep,
sings a song about her dad like stealing French fries off her plate that like.
Yes,
literally like it made me well up. It's like it's so beautiful. Yeah. Now I'm forgetting the person who wrote that song is the person who would go on to create Steven Universe, and I can't, Rebecca Sugar.
Yeah,
you got, yeah, it. So yeah, and I was never got into Steven Universe, but I know people love that, so maybe that would be a show. Are there any other, I know you were an Adventure Time fan. Are there any other kids shows?
No, I mean, but no, but I'm not really like an active, I'm not seeking that out, or I wasn't,
yeah,
haven't been for a while. So I, you know,
yeah,
don't know.
I did watch some of the DuckTales reboot.
Is that good?
It actually is, yeah, and a big part of it is that okay, we haven't talked about Archer's a very good show. I remember you not being as into Archer as I was, or
yeah,
that show's like still on, isn't it?
I think it's still on.
Yeah, I think the last one I watched was the like when I went to LA, and it was like a noirish,
oh, right, type, yeah,
thing.
Yeah, 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 whatever, yeah, whatever, yeah, the subtitle was.
But I think one of the, we're going to talk about like the way that shows look, like I talked about earlier. I think Archer looked cool, or looks cool, I guess. But I also think, talk about like learning the wrong lessons. I think what's happened since is that animation that is aimed at adults is increasingly boring looking. Because I think, from what I understand, I think like the networks or studios or whatever like want it to be very clear that this isn't for kids, and so they kind of have this this look. And that's, so to get back to what I was saying about DuckTales, which is 2017, it's well outside the boundaries, but it is a really visually cool, like kinetic, fun show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of why I like it. Whereas like, I don't know, Star Trek Lower Decks or whatever. I haven't watched it, but I've seen enough. Like, I know what the look of the show is, and it looks boring.
Right. Would, yeah. Okay. What about, I mean, where does like BoJack, I guess it has a distinct, it does have a distinct style. Or
yeah, Lisa Hannawalt is the cartoonist that kind of like laid out the template for what BoJack Horseman would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the way BoJack looks, the show, and I guess BoJack the character as well. But I, yeah, I really enjoy BoJack. And that's another show that like, I mean, most good shows get better as they go. The first season of BoJack is kind of a, you gotta wade through it. It seems to be like most of the first season of BoJack is kind of, if you heard the premise of the show, you know, a depressed alcoholic, mm-hmm, former TV star from the 90s, you could probably imagine what the first season is like. It's kind of like that. It isn't until the second season that they start getting deeper into psychology and guilt and regrets and interpersonal relationships and stuff like that. And also one of my favorite things about BoJack is that it could be this like very heavy show about like, you know, what, can you ever atone for the wrongs that you've done in your life? Can you actually become a better person? And then mixed with that is some of the fucking silliest comedy imaginable. And that's a big part of why I love BoJack. But you got me off on a tangent about BoJack because I love it so much.
Yes. So you said kids?
Yeah. So the other one I wanted to like pour one out for the short-lived shows that we love.
Sure.
You and I were both big Rubicon people.
Loved Rubicon. Yep.
Yeah. Big Rubicon was great. I know you. I'll let you say what comes to mind for you.
Terriers.
Oh, Terriers. Remember that wasn't what I thought you were going to say, but yeah. Yeah.
What did you think I was going to say?
John from Cincinnati.
Oh, yes. That's a show that deserves some kind of reappraisal. I don't know. I don't know if it'll ever be a huge cult sensation or anything, but I think it definitely, they did it dirty. I mean, putting it on immediately after the Soprano finale, that's a show killer.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to go back and watch John Cincinnati again because I was frustrated with it.
Yeah. And it's understandable
at the time, but there are also moments that I still think of that I love.
Yeah. Some of that frustration was certainly intentional.
Yeah.
And maybe some of it wasn't, but yeah.
But there's still something I watched. I remember I watched the third episode twice of John from Cincinnati, largely because, and I still remember that, like, the final shot with the kid in the coma and the TV on the radio needle drop.
Right, Ed O'Neill with the, he's got the bird. Yep.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff.
I remember very well. Yeah. That was kind of. Did you finish? To me, that was kind of the moment.
I don't think I ever even finished it.
To me, that was the moment that sealed it. Like, okay, I'm in on this show. I'm gonna watch it through to the end.
Yeah. Another one, even though it got a second season, so it's not a one season wonder. Better Off Ted.
Sure.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, really good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? Any others? I'm sure I'll kick myself about some other shows that I loved that got shit canned.
Yeah. One season. Well, I don't know. I think. And maybe I'm sure I'll think of more as well.
Yeah.
But I feel like, kind of going back to your point, I feel like one of the hallmarks of this new golden age we're talking about is like. Not a lot of shows just got like dumped after a year. A lot of shows got 2, 3, 4 seasons, even if they weren't doing big numbers, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That like there was maybe in the last gasp before the fucking like tech idiots took over TV, there were people who believed in shows that would like something like Fringe, which was like.
Right.
Great. Cancelable from its first season, but somehow got 5 seasons because someone believed in it.
Yeah. And it only really got good in the end of season one, I think. Yeah.
I think it takes even longer, but yeah.
Yeah.
That Fringe is like a great show that is like, I hesitate to recommend to anyone because it's like, right. It's like you, once you've put in 40 hours, it gets really good, but Fringe does get really good. If you're willing to make that commitment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess there were shows that did get were treated unceremoniously, like Firefly to bring Joss Whedon back up. But that I think that really shows how things have changed, because Firefly, I guess that was pretty early on. What was that, 2002? Something like that.
It was right when did Buffy end? 2003, so it was right before that.
Right, yeah. But Firefly is a show, like the Golden Age had enough of an impact on how we watch TV that it's hard to imagine like anyone like hiring Joss Whedon to make a genre show and then like airing the episodes out of order.
Right. Yeah,
it's insane now to think like, that they would do that. I mean, even with like comedies, like it seems like we have more of what's what I'm looking for, serialization of things.
Right.
The last show I remember really getting that treatment of like unfair treatment was Happy Endings, of things airing like all out of
Right. Yeah,
production
and then
order.
they would randomly show two on a night, and then it would be off the air for 5 weeks, and then it would,
Yeah.
very
I know
different.
you were a big Happy Endings guy. Have you, and I watched it for the first time during like quarantine times, and I found I like the characters. I really like the show, but I also found a lot of the comedy to be very like of its era in a way that hasn't aged well. I don't mean aged well in terms of like problematicness, but there's a lot of don't ever do that again, or that like or the like yeah, I heard it as soon as I said it. That sort of like there's a lot of that kind of humor that I feel is very time stamped now.
I know exactly what you're saying, but it was the time, so it's hard to fault.
All right, so let's get back into like we should pr probably wrap up, but let's get back into like what have we decided are the shows. If someone wants to make a list of shows to watch, what are the canonical shows? We agree on Sopranos, we agree on Friday Night Lights and Mad Men and Deadwood.
I'd say Hall and Catch Fire, throw it in.
Okay, and then I'm gonna throw in Adventure Time.
Okay, great. The Wire?
I guess, but watch Sopranos first.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah,
to
make
me,
that the priority.
Wire's lowest on that totem pole.
For some more recent stuff, I would say Girls deserves to be in there. And I guess what I'm thinking of the canon is not necessarily like all of these shows are 100% great, but I think I guess I'm saying like what is most representative, you know? And so yeah, Arrested Development. Louis with a big asterisk.
Big ass. Yeah, maybe select episodes or something. Or actually, no, scratch Louis, maybe Better Things. It's a little outside the
Oh
window, but
yeah.
it's a good alternative.
That's
It's the best.
I'm glad you brought up Better Things. It's really great, even though Pam Adlon has a real like saccharine streak, and
Yeah,
so
weirdly.
sometimes stuff could be like a little hokey, but in a way that I liked.
Yeah, weirdly, because she's such a I would never say this phrase, but like a tough old broad.
Her persona is the like seen it all. But yeah, there's definitely some sappiness that I sometimes really like in Better Things. But I love the Better Things. Talk about like playing with the form. Like, I feel like Better Things would often like have like the inception of the premise of the episode would be something sitcom-y. Like, oh no, the power went out, you know? But then or like uh-oh, Sam accidentally ate an edible and got too high or whatever, but then those go on to be like that's just the jumping off point. It ends up being like you know, he in the
It's a little more
in the
real.
power outage one, she ends up like going to Home Depot with her best friend's ex-husband to buy a
That's right.
generator.
That's right.
The pot brownie, whatever it was that she ate, that's one of my favorite episodes because that's the one where Frankie comes home and tells Sam that she lost her virginity, and like Sam has to like sort of be there for her middle daughter while also
Despite,
like acknowledging like I'm super high right now.
I remember that one.
Okay, well, unless you can think of any more, I think
I mean, probably later, but you can do an addendum.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. Do we want to talk about like why we think it ended a little more?
I
Did
mean,
we
I think
cover that enough?
I kind of said
You said your piece.
that it's like fan driven and the streaming model, I think, are the main reasons.
Yeah. I would
Do you
say
have any other thoughts
also,
though?
No, I mean, you basically covered it. I would say the IP thing is a good example.
Yeah.
Of, and even like an example that occurred to me, it's a show that everyone loved, but like Watchmen is like, it's a beloved work in comics, and then they made a movie that most people don't like. I don't like it. And then the show took an interesting approach to it, but it's still ultimately like an IP extension.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like you take an established showrunner, celebrity showrunner, you give them a piece of IP, and you could still make a good show, but I think there's something, maybe there's something lacking there, or it's certainly a change, you know?
I guess the question we haven't really addressed is, we've talked now about why it ended, but why did it start?
Yeah.
Let's do I mean, that I think
really quickly.
I think it comes down to, you know, there are cultural forces, but there are also sometimes there are just people who make decisions. And I think the people who were running HBO at that time were pushing for a certain type of TV. And I think that's a big part. And then it caught on because of there being more and more channels, which now there are endless channels. So things could be a little bit more niche. And then I think I talked about how streaming is one of the reasons that it ended, but I think one of the reasons it began is TV on DVD, you know, that you could suddenly, like,
sure,
it was
very
easy to catch up on, which is how I first watched Sopranos on DVD. I first watched Buffy on DVD before I caught up. I'm sure there's home movies. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like, and it's kind of a wave. Like you look at like, I mean, I think, yeah, Sopranos is the show, but like just before that was Oz, which is not to me like a great show, but it's kind of a precursor. And even Sex and the City is similar in a way. And it's like, they were trying things. They're letting people take chances. Yeah. And I think a big one that I wanted to make sure to mention was the Larry Sanders Show, which I don't know if you, did you ever get to that?
No, I've never watched it.
Well, A, it's a great show.
Yeah.
And B, I know from some interview or another that David Chase was a fan, and it's one of the reasons they took The Sopranos to HBO. Like, oh, that's a good show. I think HBO would maybe let me do a little more with the show that I want to do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Another funny,
in fact,
like,
I would almost argue it's way too outside the lines, but to me, Larry Sanders, like, is kind of like one of those great examples of like a show that fits in this new golden age we're talking about. So if you want to add that on the list.
Yeah. Yeah. A funny, speaking of HBO, you've heard this story about how Deadwood came to be, that David Milch had this idea for a show that would examine the way that human beings sort of naturally create societies out of chaos. And it was supposed to be set in ancient Rome. And HBO was like, actually, John Milius is doing an ancient Rome series. Yeah. Could you tell this story somewhere else? And he's like, he was like, let me think about it. And he came up with Deadwood.
Yeah. It's a funny story. It's like, oh, I can't do it in Rome. Okay. It's a Western now.
It's a Western.
it's just,
yeah.
But that's, yeah.
So, I'll end this. I end up putting you on the spot. What are some current shows, or at least very recent shows, that you think carry on the tradition? Are you watching anything? Yeah, because I've got one answer of a show that just aired its series finale a month or two ago, and that's Reservation Dogs.
Oh yeah, that came to my mind immediately.
Yeah, the only good thing Taika Waititi has had his hand in at least half a decade.
many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen that new one yet?
No.
Okay. Are you going to see it?
Maybe. I don't know. I saw the documentary that it's based on.
Okay. Yeah. How was that?
It's good. It's like a crowd pleaser. So that was
Yeah.
It's not surprising that someone made a movie out of it.
No, not surprised. Yeah. I would say the only things that come to mind are comedies. So How To with John Wilson. I don't know if you've checked that out.
I haven't watched the new season, which I think is the final season. I haven't watched it yet, but
it's
that's a show I think I've said before, maybe on the podcast, that like bridges the like the people that I interact with online who are super into comedy and the people who I interact with online who are like cinephiles. Like
documentary.
They both love How To with John Wilson.
As they should. And then, hey, taking it back to the Adult Swim thing, I think it's over now, but Joe Pera Talks With You.
Yeah, Joe Pera Talks With You is a great, like...
How much more... I mean, Joe Pera was not a choir teacher, but how much more personal could that show feel, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I love Joe Pera. I've watched it. It's very easy to watch through multiple times. I've watched it through multiple times. And one of the things I think of in the first season, there's the breakfast episode.
The perfect egg bite?
That one's in there. But what I'm also thinking of is when he's trying to decide what to have for breakfast, the waitress suggests Eggs Benedict, and he says, too opulent for any day but Easter. I'm trying to think what else. You know what I think it's over now, and I only watched the first season on Paramount Plus. So we haven't talked a lot about like broadcast shows. We talked about some, but have you watched Evil with Luke Coulter?
I only got about half a season.
Oh really?
I would like to go back to it actually, because I was enjoying it.
Okay, yeah, it is.
You know, I was a Good Wife. I was a Good Wife viewer,
right? Yeah,
That's I feel the like Kings they again. They yeah. the Kings, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I feel like CBS or Paramount or whoever kind of just let them do what they want to do at this point.
Yeah,
right. That for what I saw, it's kind of a strange show and an interesting show.
That first season was really great. I look forward to getting back into it, but jumping around trying to catch up on other TV right now.
Last thing that came to mind, I don't know if you watched it, Severance.
Oh no, was that good? Natalie watched
it. It's very good. It's very good. And I think, yeah, in terms, if we're talking like dramas, I think that's the only recent thing that I've personally seen that kind of holds up in that way.
Yeah. Okay. I've definitely been meaning to watch it. I'm also a big fan of one of the actresses on the show, Deechan Lochman is her name.
Yep. Sure. She's from Dollhouse.
Yeah, she's very talented and also quite beautiful. I have a picture of myself with her somewhere.
Do you really?
Yeah, I met her at like an event, and there were all sorts of celebrities at this event. Natalie was there with me. She got a picture taken with Juliette Lewis. She got a picture taken with Dave Foley. But the one that I had to be like,
you got Deechan Lochman.
I was like, I'm going to get my picture taken with Deechan Lochman. I don't know if you can see that on the Zoom.
She's shorter than I thought. I thought,
yeah. Yeah, she does like read tall. Yeah.
He reads tall. Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So,
wait, how do you know her? From Dollhouse?
Dollhouse. Like. She's also in she's in some movies. She's in a really bad movie called Too Late with I think I'm thinking of the right movie of Too Late with John Hawks. I think she's in that. But Dollhouse. Wait,
you were going to mention stuff. You're a big fan of.
I was trying to think of other current shows, and then I realized I was almost going to do your thing with The Office of picking a non-American show, but. My Brilliant Friend is one of those shows on TV.
Love that show.
That's an Italian show. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is an HBO American.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, all right. Well, I think we did it. I think we defined the new golden age of American television. Did we not talk enough about your favorite show? Did we leave off The Shield? I'm sorry if we left off The Shield.
Yeah. I mean, we feel bad. We didn't even mention Twin Peaks, which has a very interesting. It's like both pre and post Golden Age, and it's kind of, it doesn't fit into most of the parameters we set, and yet at the same time, it's very influential and it's a great show.
Well, yeah, I did actually think about it earlier
Amazing.
when you described Tim and Eric as avant-garde TV. I thought
Oh
Twin
yeah,
Peaks: The Return definitely would counter that too.
that's a good call. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
All right. Well, you can find me at battleshipretention.com. Listen to my other podcast that I mentioned earlier, the one where I met your mother. Check me out on I'm on Letterboxd at David Bax, and I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension.
Still
Sean,
on that
where?
Twitter, huh?
What's that?
Are you still on Twitter, huh?
I use it to promote Battleship Retention stuff, and then I will sometimes like check certain friends and like
Right.
reply to them or whatever. But mostly, if I have an original thought that I want to put out, I
Blue
will
sky.
blue sky it.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
I've never really self-promoted on here, but I have a band currently called Weird Spirit. The album is called You Are the Architect, and it's available on Bandcamp. It's on Tidal, Apple Music, Spotify, Boo. Yeah, everywhere. Everywhere you can stream or buy it on Bandcamp. And
And it is really
if
good. I can vouch. It's very good.
well, thank you.
And
And
go
if any
if Weird Spirit comes to your town, go see them live. They put on a good show.
Thank you. Yeah, but that's it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Thank you at home for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.